Welcome to the Fireside. I'm Elsa, and I'm by the fire with Swamp Cracker, and this is the Blood and Soil Fireside Chat. In this episode of the chat, we'll be discussing Weimar Germany and the similarities between today's America and what Weimar was like post-World War I, leading up to the 1933 change. So grab your favorite beverage and warm yourself by our fire.
And don't burn yourselves. If Weimar Germany is not like today's America, I don't know what to say.
Well, and it's almost become, I think, at this point, like a global phenomena. You know, I mean, seeing things like the Crocus event in Russia over the weekend, I mean, it just seems like an infection at this point. Like, the whole world has become Weimar Germany.
Pretty much. Although,
at least,
you know,
the European nations, for sure, because, I mean, you know, every white nation right now is infected with, you know, massive immigration, you know, population exchange, and, everything from, you know, indoctrination of children at the very most, you know, foundational levels to be trans or whatever the flavor of the month is, and, you know, vaccinations that make you sterile.
Yeah.
And I mean, hey, the whole trans movement began in Weimar Germany. Let's not forget that.
Correct. I think it's not only a Western problem, but like you said, it's even affecting some countries in the East. But we have a lot of J1 workers here in a seasonal town. And I met a man from Africa, and I asked him, I said, listen, do you have any of these problems, coronavirus vaccines, trans women, men that don't know where to take a piss, boys that want to be cats? He said, no, our only problem is malaria. So it's not everywhere, is what I'm saying. It's a Western globalist thing. And what are they going to do when the globalists get to Africa?
They're already there. I mean, look at how China has been moving into Africa. You know, they've basically recreated a slave state. You know, if you look at the eastern seaboard of Africa,
Yes.
There's huge Chinese enclaves. You know, they've created like a massive Chinese diaspora there, basically to exploit, you know, draw out resources and exploit the local working population.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Weimar Constitution and talk a little bit about Weimar Germany?
Well, all right, so that whole thing began at the close of the war, and you know, I mean, obviously there was a few months of transition, but on August 11, 1919 was when the Constitution was ratified, and it remained in place until January of 1933 when the National Socialists assumed control. And basically, the Weimar Constitution was your typically socialist constitution, like not in the National Socialist sense, but in the communist sense. You know, they had made all kinds of promises about how, you know, people would be well housed and, you know, well fed, and none of those things ever really came to fruition. And, you know, I think that a lot of that was due to the massive amount of debt that, you know, Germany was saddled with at the close of the war. I mean, basically reparations for all of the Allied nations, you know, resulted in what in today's money would be billions of dollars that, you know, even an economic powerhouse such as Germany couldn't really withstand.
Right. How do you feel about telling us a little bit about the feel for Germany coming out of, how were the people feeling coming out of World War One? They just got their asses beat, right, Germany?
Well, yeah.
A bunch of restrictions put on them, their land stolen. So they're pretty downtrodden people right about now, August 11th.
Well, you know, you've got the whole Danzig corridor. You know, a huge swath of eastern Germany had been, you know, annexed into Poland. And Poland itself was seeing some significant trauma, you know, as a consequence of Soviet influence. You know, if you look at what was going on, in, like, for example, in Ukraine during that period of time when Ukraine was absorbed into the Soviet Union and the Holodomor, Poland was feeling a lot of the effects of that, you know. The Soviet Union was basically starving at that point, and they were pulling in grain, you know, they were utilizing embargoes to pull in grain from, like, all across Eastern Europe. And so basically the Danzig corridor, the people who were living there were suffering under a yoke of starvation, exploitation by the Polish government. The Germans were being, you know, the ethnic Germans were being forcibly replaced by Poles. There was just a lot of that going on at the time. And of course, the morale in the rest of Germany, you know, suffered tremendously, not merely as a consequence of the loss of the war itself, which was massive. You know, the fact that they had World War One and its trench warfare was incredibly brutal. And so you had men coming home with arms and legs blown off for the first time in history, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you had, at the time, they were calling it shell shock, which is basically the nascent version of PTSD. So they had a huge group of people that were returning home that were just essentially zombies at that point. And this was difficult for the economy to reabsorb. It was difficult providing adequate care for these people. They were homeless, you know, beggars in the street, you know, who were veterans. You had workhouses filled with young men who couldn't afford to extract themselves from that, much less start a family. So basically you were looking at the fabric of society unraveling.
They were definitely primed for what is fixing to happen.
Yeah.
I like to run those parallels sometimes when speaking to brothers and sisters in the cause, that I don't feel the United States is quite there yet. But that's a whole nother story as far as being primed and absolutely ready for, as they say, shit to hit the fan and a huge change to take place. What that change looks like, how it crashes, I don't want to get into that. I'm not a prophet, but, you know.
Well, the difference, I think, is that, you know, the United States still has a fairly broad middle class, you know. There are, in essence, you know, two Americas at this point, I think. You know,
We see them actively attacking the middle class. That's not a military secret either.
No, of course not. And that's purposeful. You know, because they want to, when I say there's two Americas, I mean there's basically like a blue-collar working class that's actually largely impoverished. And then you have essentially everyone else, you know. and they're trying to actively tax people and, you know, drive inflation up essentially to move more and more people from bracket A into bracket B. And, you know, that, I think the point of that is to create a massive slave class essentially. But, you know, what that all boils down to is you're going to piss enough people off that, you know, they're going to throw that yoke off eventually if you can't demoralize them enough.
History, you know, is, reflects that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when you look at some of the degeneracy that's going on, like, you know, for example, with the Pride movement and, you know, just all everybody is trans all of a sudden. It's like, you know, the pronouns and the thises and the thatses. And that is part and parcel of that whole demoralization process and essentially ripping apart the fabric of, you know, the family unit. You know, because as long as people have a support system of family, you know, people remain generically strong. But when you start stripping that away and people are looking more and more to the state for sustenance and support, and it's hollow, it's not real, you know, and that's when you start seeing more and more of this kind of unraveling occur. And, you know, you can look at statistics, you know, you can compare statistics between Weimar Germany and the United States right now and look at, you know, people, you know, people experiencing homelessness. You know, there is a 12% year-over-year increase, you know, from last year. And, you know, you're just going to see more of that with the influx of all of the people over the border that are coming at this point. And they're coming from everywhere. It's not like, you know, you'd think all of Mexico was moving into the United States. But the reality of it is that they're coming from all over Latin America. They're coming from, you know, Asia. There's plenty of Chinese that have been coming in over the border and, you know, military-aged men.
And now they're not only coming in from the south, they're coming in from the north. They're
mm-hmm.
coming in from Maine as well now.
And I'm sure that that's true, you know, all across the Midwest corridor too, because you've got huge tracts of land that nobody even looks at, you know?
Right, yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, it's just, it's inhospitable territory to begin with, so, you know, but...
And some of these cartels and agencies that get these people here are pretty elaborate with underground tunnel systems and, you know, tie a GPS to your ass. And it's incredible that we allow it. It's incredible that, you know, what they do to get people here, you know?
Yeah. Planes, trains, and automobiles. I mean,
and the gullibility of people, the gullibility of people. To walk and tread this whole, you know, whether they're really making the trip or they're, you know, with their cell phones, we don't know if they're just taking photo ops along the way. But, you know, to convince those people to come here, we're not that, I mean, we're a great country, but fuck, you know, we're not that fucking great.
Well,
comparatively speaking, perhaps, but still they've convinced the people to come here.
Yeah, the propaganda
the dream,
has gone out
the
that there's
dream.
Free money here, you know, and,
yeah.
And what that guy, I think he was from Venezuela, that he just got his TikTok banned or something last week because he had been spreading around to his 5 million followers. Forgive the dogs.
That's okay. Dogs are good. Hitler had one, remember?
Yeah. But no, like his 5 million followers were like watching him talk about, you know, how to break into somebody's house and become a squatter and how, you know, you can't really legally remove them. You have to like go through all of these shenanigans through the courts to get them out.
Yeah. And you know what's what they're doing to even the normal people, we call them normies, are seeing it. And not only that, they're couple people I've, because I work in retail, so I see people, talk to normal people. They're starting, some of them are starting to understand why Germany had such a righteous anger. You know, they don't understand that the Holocaust was fake yet. They don't understand that 6 million is fucking crazy and all that stuff. Maybe some had to be dealt with as traitors, but 6 million, come on. They don't get that, but they understand the righteous anger. They understand being pissed off, burning books, and trying to get rid of these people from their country.
Mm-hmm.
The instigators. Yeah.
Yeah.
Call them the instigators. Is that safe with me?
Yeah.
The instigators? The elites?
It's as good of a word as any. And,
okay.
You know, it's true to fact.
Absolutely.
But no, I mean, you know, what you have not seen yet, although some of the prices have become startling, you know, we haven't seen the let's stick a wheelbarrow full of dollars, you know, and drive that down to the store to buy a loaf of bread. You know, that was true in Germany in the early 30s. And, you know, but and certainly food prices have skyrocketed.
Oh, absolutely. Which is
crazy. I mean, in some cases, it's, you know, depending on what you're trying to buy, and typically, you know, it's the healthier raw foods that you're trying to get, prices have doubled.
Oh, absolutely. I eat, you know, organic beef. It has to be grass fed because of the way, and it's one up probably a quarter of what it was.
Yeah.
If not two thirds. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, that's another thing reflective I was thinking before. You know, ever since the beginning of time, our people have always complained. I can remember my grandmother complaining about the price of bread going up. I don't remember what it was, but it was, a slight. And we always complain about change, but we never seem to do anything about it.
Yeah.
We always pay more until, you know, it's like kicking the lion. Until we've had enough.
Right. But, you know, and I think inherently the European people tend to exhibit this, you know, childlike wonderment, you know, and naivete about the world, you know, and we tend to like see the good in everything, and we tend to want to help people and stuff like that, and that gets exploited every single time. You know, and because that's so ingrained in who we are, you know, it's hard for us to set that aside, you know, at the first slight. You know, it was that the wrath of the Saxon, the Rudyard Kipling poem.
Sure.
No. There's this It's a great poem.
Okay. I hear fingers. You'll find it.
The Wrath of the Awakened Saxon is what it's called.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
It was not part of their blood. It came to them very late, with long arrears to make good, when the Saxon began to hate. They were not easily moved. They were icy, willing to wait till every count should be proved, ere the Saxon began to hate. Their voices were even and low, their eyes were level and straight. There was neither sign nor show when the Saxon began to hate. It was not preached to the crowd, it was not taught by the state. No man spoke it aloud when the Saxon began to hate. It was not suddenly bred, it will not swiftly abate through the chilled years ahead, when time shall count from the date that the Saxon began to hate. And I think
you rock. You rock.
Her words were never spoken, though. I mean, that is the essence of, you know, who we are as Europeans. It's like, you know,
absolutely.
The fire is slow to start, but once it's there, man, look out.
Yeah. Once it's there.
And I mean, as far as, I don't know. I think the there is no political solution, you know, sort of meme is kind of like, I think that that idea has kind of taken hold in the minds of more normies, if you will. I think people are starting to realize that voting is not going to change anything. You know, you're, it's a single party basically with different names. You know, the Republicans
right,
just tax you a little bit less than the Democrats, but their agendas are the same. Nothing ever changes with them. Mm-hmm. And
they got this other guy running as an independent, and they still don't, people still don't realize that he's even part of the same two party, three. It's all the same.
Well, and Kennedy, I mean, he's got some crazy fucking ideas too. I mean, he's like super anti Second Amendment, and I mean, that's got to be a red flag right there. You know, because
he's a,
when,
listen, he's a Kennedy. That's a fucking red flag right there.
I mean,
well,
come on.
I don't know. I mean, if you go back and look at JFK and what, you know, JFK actually was, I mean, he was a Democrat, but back in the 60s, that was a different story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And, I, you know, there's a reason why he was assassinated, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, I get his talking out against the federal government and, you know, Jews or, you know, elites or whatever, but
mm-hmm.
That's great, but the other part of his personality sucked. He wasn't a great guy, you know what I mean?
Oh,
none of
no,
them are.
But none of them are, but, you
the
know.
The way they treat women, the way, you know.
But
yeah,
the point
the
that I'm making is when you look at the current, you know, Kennedy, you know, any time that somebody wants to say, you know, we need to curtail the Second Amendment or we need to, like, you know, have common sense gun control, when they start talking about stuff like that, the reality of it is that they want to keep guns out of the hands of law-abiding citizens so that the government maintains more control. And the government never did anything to help anybody, really. You know?
No. I mean, he sits there and says it, too. He talks out of both sides of his face. He wants to take, you know, things from people and mess with. And now the other side of his face, he says, once the government takes something, in his all cracking ass voice, once the government takes something from you, you don't get it back. No shit, but you want to take.
Well, that's, yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. I mean, and I understand that his focus is on, like, you know, healthcare and, you know, vaccinations and stuff like that, which I saw some testimony, some congressional testimony the other day where this guy was talking about how the Amish have been studied, you know, by the government for decades, yet, you know, no reports have ever really been made public about those studies. And it's generally because if you look at the population of Amish who don't do vaccinations, you know, they don't do, you know, regular Western medicine in the typical sense. And they have, like, the lowest incidence of ADHD, the lowest incidence of autism, the lowest incidence of suicidal ideation in teens of any population.
Where is this
in
again?
In the United States. Huh?
Where is this again?
This was some congressional testimony that was given. I saw a video about it the other day, but I think it was just last week. But, you know, he was talking about the decades-long, you know, studies that have been done about the Amish, but they've been suppressing that information because, you know, the medical infrastructure doesn't want to hear it. They don't want to hear that, you know, eating healthy and clean living, you know, is better for you in the long run than, you know, pumping your veins full of mercury and stuff.
Which
you
is
know?
In fact, you know, which is in fact a national socialist policy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like your Kennedys, your Trumps, everybody's got a few good things to say that parallel national socialism, but nobody's got the entire package down yet.
Well, and I think that that's partly because most of these guys are just tools, you know?
Yes.
Like they add in enough components to draw in people, right, and keep you sucked into that matrix, but they stop short of, you know, actually delivering on the issue. And if they,
yeah,
if somebody actually stood up and did that, it would revolutionize everything, but it would also tear apart the entire deep state and, you know, all of the infrastructure that they've spent the last 80 years building.
And that's why we're here, right? Revolution?
Well, they say it only takes 3% of the population, right?
Yeah, well, that's what they say. It's a process. It is definitely a process. And we are living in post-World War I, pre-World War II Germany right now.
Mm-hmm.
Minus the fact that we, you know, aren't coming out of a world war.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, it certainly we've been in an ongoing Cold War, even if, you know, the Cold War of the 80s is long over. But it still seems like there's an unarmed conflict going on.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
The government against the people, or, you know, governments against each other, and the business of spying. You know, the U.S. government can't spy on its own people constitutionally, but they can buy intelligence from allied nations that can spy on the American people.
Right. And they can get away with a lot. They can get away with a lot since the Patriot Act, too.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. You know, I was looking at some stuff that, and that's a whole nother rabbit hole, but, yeah, being declared a terrorist or even a domestic terrorist, you lose certain rights. But that's a rabbit hole.
Trying to stay
well,
parallels
the fact,
between.
The fact that they can do that without you even knowing about it.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine a more frightening thing? You know, next that you wake up one morning and, you know, unbeknownst to you, you know, after planning a vacation for months, you wind up on a no-fly list and you can't go.
Yeah. Don't say
you know?
That. We were talking about my luck all the time. So, yeah, but that's, you know, it's highly possible. And I have associates and friends that have had that situation happen to them. You know, they've been harassed by TSA because they are on a watch list trying to travel. Mm-hmm. Because of
yeah.
who they are.
Although, you know, with the diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, things that have been going on with the airlines these days, who wants to fly anymore?
Nobody. Unless you absolutely have to.
Yeah.
Know? Unless you absolutely
yeah.
have to.
No, and I mean, you know, I know that we've talked before about, you know, what do you do next? You know, how do you try to rebuild this, you know? And, you know, I hate to, you know, be a black pill dispenser, but it's just like, you know, how do you even get there? How do you even get to that point from here? You know, because we're nowhere near the rebuilding
right.
stage at this point.
No, we have to focus on what we can accomplish today and within our lifetime. So many times we're playing, whether it's cosplay or mind masturbation and utopias and white states and memes. What are we doing for now? Are we building communities and networks of people? Or are we, you know, not we, but are generations below us having children? Are they reproducing, or are they just doing absolutely nothing?
Mm-hmm.
Going to the gym and going hiking and taking a picture with a flag is a form of activism, but it's really not the cause.
Well, no. And, you know, it unfortunately, we are looking at a shrinking gene pool at this point. And, you know, the funny thing is, and that there is a silver lining to that, I guess. When you look at, like, the damage, the reproductive damage that's been done, a lot of the people that are most affected by that are the people that we really don't want in the gene pool at this point anyway.
Right.
You know, most of our people have avoided all that stuff. And, you know, so unwittingly, I think that the elite class is sort of like creating this, you know, segregated group, basically, that, you know, are going to, at some point, be radicalized enough to do something about it, you know?
I hope the only problem that I see with everything would be leadership principle and not selling the idea and people not buying the idea and buying the person, a la William Pierce, a la whoever, great leaders. And I get it. You need a great leader. That leadership principle is, you know, it works, but at the same time, you can't buy into a charlatan that's going to take you to the promised land, because it won't last. You'll get to your promised land and you'll end up like Germany. You got to believe in your heart about what you're doing, that it is what you're doing basically is saving your race from extermination.
Well,
or genocide, or breeding out, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and certainly there were elements of that. I mean, you know, Uncle A, you know, saw this. You know, he envisioned all of this. You know, he knew that they were in a life and death struggle. You know, and what we've seen in the aftermath of all of that has just been a long, slow descent. And I want to say that what we're talking about right now emphasizes the need for vision and goals. Because
yes.
although, you know, yes, it's not mental masturbation and pie in the sky utopias are not helpful, but at the same time, you do need to have a platform and a set of goals that you're working towards, because the other side is doing things on a generational basis. They're playing the long game.
Right. We don't play the long game as a people. We give them the reaction they want, and they are behind the scenes trying to pass laws, trying to, you know, make it illegal basically for you to be white. And you're out there, we're out there in the street, you know, which is cool, looks good, it's activism, boy, I got my white nationalist card now. But what has it actually done for the white race?
Well, that's
not much.
That's the $100,000 question, right?
We've been doing this for fucking years, but that's a whole nother rabbit trail. You know, we can run some parallels on what and how Germany actually took over, you know, or excuse me, National Socialists actually took over. It wasn't through protesting. They rallied. There's a difference. Maybe on another show.
Well, and certainly, I mean, you can look back and see how the cycle has kind of repeated itself. You could even go back to AD 70 and you know, Hadrian and the destruction of the temple and Bar Kokhba, you know. I mean, this what we are seeing is the latest and actually probably the greatest attempt in the history of the cyclical conflict between two groups of people. And, you know, one can say that it is sort of like, you know, the battle of good and evil for the ownership of man's soul, you know. But you can certainly look back and see how it has developed over time, how, you know, with each successive attempt, they've gotten better and better at playing the game. And we haven't been keeping up. So, you know, what we do need to do is strategically look back in history and start learning those lessons, you know, so that we can gird ourselves against them in the future.
Yeah. You know, the white pill and all that is, and you got to love history, because I know it's just a loose term, but it repeats itself. And it does. And, you know, the elitists over history have gotten very bold and blatant in their agenda and have fallen.
Mm-hmm.
They peak and fall and peak and fall, and the agenda goes their way and then it comes unglued.
Right. Well, and it seems to come unglued every, you know, at the point where the mask comes off, right? And,
yes.
You know, that's when everything starts to unravel. And over the course of time, you know, they've delayed and delayed and delayed pulling off that mask. But, you know, inevitably they can't help themselves and they do it. You know, they push too hard or go too far, you know, and the last straw breaks the camel's back, you know? And it's just, I, it's hard for people because we have such a short lifespan and there are so few people who are really historical scholars that could actually say, hey, look at this pattern. See, notice this pattern.
Right.
And be aware of these things before they happen. You know, it always like culminates in that mask ripping off. And someday they're not going to rip off the mask. You know, if we fail in our efforts at this point, at this point in the cycle, they're going to start again. And at some point, they're not going to rip off the mask. And that's when everything comes to an end.
Mm-hmm. They won't rip off the mask, huh?
Well,
you don't think they won't get frustrated, turn the table upside down and say, fuck it. We'll accelerate the end for you if you don't want to listen.
Well, I'm just saying, it's like, you know, the intervals have become longer and longer over time because they are learning, right? But, you know, somebody goes too far.
I don't know, are they learning? Like if you were a little girl and your parent, I didn't mean to interrupt you, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Your parents told you, hey, don't put your hand on that, it's hot. You did it anyway, you're crying. Maybe you've done it again, same burner. You think you would do it 110 times? I'm just saying.
Well, you know, I'm just saying, like I said, it's a generational game that they're playing. And, you know, they've figured out over time how to delay those intervals, you know, how to reap the most reward.
They've stripped the European of that through propaganda and mind worms and all that other shit, because as a people, we used to not fear death and we always lived for tomorrow. Now we're materialistic in general. We live for today, money, greed, materialistic stuff. We don't give a shit about tomorrow. Generally speaking, as a people, we don't care about tomorrow. We don't care about our children. If they marry, as long as they are, you know, what is it? As long as they love, as long as there's love. So Jamie can marry the brother man and then the product of the brother man and her being together, it doesn't matter. You know, the gene pool screwed and whatever child they had has no identity now. And I think that's what the big picture is, an identity-less consumer. Why? I don't know.
Oh, we could do a whole episode on just, you know, the health consequences of miscegenation. I mean,
we will. We will.
But I mean, there's what that started with the removal of honor.
Yeah.
You know, and I firmly believe that once, you know, certain Abrahamic religions got spread throughout the world, right? Mm. People stopped focusing gradually. This took time. Again, this is a generational game, right?
It
took time, but people were removed from their sense of honor, not only to themselves, but to their people. The whole concept of I am borrowing my name from future generations and I have to you know, air it to them intact. That sort of evaporated from our mindset and things became more about, you know, this ethereal concept of life everlasting and some other life.
On the streets of gold, and stuff like that.
That, you know, but what happens to your descendants here? Because they have to live in this world.
Well, you're not supposed to worry about it. The Bible says, you know, lay up in some place you're really not sure exists. You're supposed to be laying your crowns and treasures at the feet of Jesus, and the earth
and
really doesn't.
Not to, you know, that's not to alienate anybody who, you know, believes in the Christian faith.
Not.
But, you know.
Absolutely not.
You know, I'm not one to, like, foster that whole, you know, pay gang versus Christ gang stuff, because I don't think that is particularly helpful to what we're doing right now today.
Absolutely not. I believe, you know, to co-sign that quickly, our race is the top tier thing, not religion or faith. For me, not, the white race is the most important. Some people feel that who they worship or how they worship or, you know, things like that, and they bid each other against each other, and it's counterproductive.
Yeah, I mean, and that has been the mantra for decades, is God and country in that order, right? And I don't mean country like in the geographic sense. I mean it, you know, in the tribal
the
sense. Yes.
There has to be a form of, you know, we've looked at societies and there's different faiths like creativity and cosmotheism that aren't Abrahamic, and then you got your Christian identity and your Roman Catholics and your traditional whatever, who know, different ways to believe. And we have to agree, if we are to build a successful society, there has to be some kind of, for the lack of better terms, religion or faith. Isn't that a staple of society?
Yeah, because
some kind of guiding principle, some kind of morale book, some kind of moral compass, whether it's the telephone pole or Jesus Christ, does it have to be?
Well, yes, because, and this all goes back to the whole, you know, visualizing achievable goals thing, you know, like people have to have something to believe in, to move towards. Otherwise they become listless. They don't have a direction. You know, so there is some sort of inherent need for us to feel like we're here with a purpose. We have a specific purpose, and maybe that purpose is ordained by God, you know. But if you don't have a structure in place, people will start making up their own. And that's what you are seeing today. You start having, you know, trans story hour at the library because, you know, people need to believe in something, and that the current faith is now the current thing.
Yeah. Damn hippies.
Well, and I understand, you know, the scientific desire behind the whole atheism movement, you know, because it was like this idea of stripping away, you know, spooky woo stuff and, like, you know, making things into what's empirical and provable. But the problem with that is that the whole atheism movement basically played right into the hands of this globalist sort of concept, because, you know, it's like once you start stripping away that faith from people, they have to look somewhere, and they start looking to the state, or they start looking to, you know, whatever fetishism that they've got going on. And that becomes their new driving point, their new faith.
Their wokeism or left, right, liberal, center, whatever it is, it's not God or creator or the universe or whatever you hold. When I say God, I don't necessarily mean, and I don't mean, you know, somebody, like there's a ghost out there, like a spirit, and I don't mean God like that. I speak of God in more of a universe as the creator, and we're part of it. And we always have been, and we always will be, and we're evolving, and we're going to keep evolving and or devolving, and I think the choice is ours.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 15 minutes. We did pretty good for our first, huh? And I'm not editing
minutes?
This out. Yeah, we've been doing this for 45 minutes. Pretty good. Yeah. Comparatively speaking to the last couple few times we tried it, and it didn't.
Yeah.
Just didn't flow very well, did it?
Well, hopefully this is better. You know, it'd be nice
Absolutely.
To kind of start getting into another topic.
Yeah, I know, Elsa. This is the third time, same topic, but the people don't know that. We're the only
ones that
know.
I know, but I just don't want to, like, have that start to reflect in my posture in discussion. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, it's like, you know, you wake up in the morning next to the same person after 40 years, and it's like, oh, you again?
Yeah. That's hilarious. Why don't you tell them what we're going to talk about next week, and we'll wrap this up.
Okay, well, next week, I'd like to talk about a letter that I read that basically describes what life was like in National Socialist Germany, you know, those years before the war, and what the goals were, and you know, the laws that were enacted, and the way that they tried to shape society in a healthier and more structured way.
That's going to be awesome. Original, right? A real letter written by a German military person or resident?
Actually, I haven't looked at the letter in a couple of days, so I'm having a senior moment, forgot his name.
That's okay. senior moment. It was your birthday yesterday. She turned 61.
Oh, shut up.
61 years young.
Not even close.
Purposely.
Hans
Alrighty,
Schmidt was
Schmidt?
His name.
Oh, cool.
Schmidt.
Schmidt. Can't wait for next week.
Yeah. I
well, you've been listening to. Are we going to wrap it up? You ready?
Yep.
You sure?
Yes.
All right. You've been listening to Blood and Soil Radio. I'm Swamp Cracker.
And I'm Elsa.
And we'll see you next week.
On the Fireside Chat.
On the Fireside Chat. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.